Welcome to Torah Nimecha, Nach Yomi, with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Aleph, Perek Hey. In this perek, we're told of the grandeur of Shlomo's kingdom, and of its large sums of many things, such as land, servants, horses, wisdom, people flocking to hear that wisdom, produce, workers, and officers. We're going to focus on several of these large sums to enhance our understanding of the success of Shlomo's kingdom. In Psukim Aleph through Hey, we're told that Shlomo was able to expand the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael even further than his father David HaMelech had before him. Shlomo's kingdom stretched, we're told, from Nahar Prat, the Euphrates River in the north, down to the border of Mitzrayim in the south, and included Eretz Plishtim, otherwise known as Aza, in the west, and the Eivar HaYarden HaMizrahi, the lands on the eastern bank of the Jordan River, which belonged to Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, to the east. Just to give us a sense of how large Eretz Yisrael was during Shlomo's reign, it was approximately 4 times the size of the modern state of Israel, which is quite incredible if you think about it. Now, Bnei Yisrael did not actually live in all these new areas that were currently contained within Eretz Yisrael's expanded borders during the time period of Shlomo, but the nations that did live there served Shlomo HaMelech by paying him taxes, which followed the custom of most conquered and conquering nations of the ancient Near East, that if one country conquered the other but allowed the native people to remain, those native people then paid taxes to the conquering nation, and this way the conquering nation was in charge, but the native people stayed where they were. And so that's exactly what happened in Shlomo's expanded borders of Eretz Yisrael. The people of Eretz Yisrael, the Bnei Yisrael, did not leave their nachalot per se, but Shlomo did have control over many, many lands beyond the nachalot of Bnei Yisrael. Most significantly, when talking about these expanded borders, is that they were peaceful borders. There was no fighting between Bnei Yisrael and their neighbors during Shlomo's reign. In fact, in Pasuk Hey, we're told, Vayeshev Yehuda v'Yisrael lavetach, and all of Bnei Yisrael dwelled in security, ish tachat gafno v'tachat te'enato, each man sitting beneath his grapevines and fig leaves. Now, why are we told that the people sat beneath these specific kinds of trees and vines? Why figs and grapes? What is the significance of this? And if we look throughout Tanakh, we actually find this language used throughout Tanakh to connote peace and prosperity, even luxury. Because grapes and vines weren't necessary for survival. Rather, they went well above and beyond people's basic needs, which were really limited to bread and water. Furthermore, not only does the image speak of grapes and figs, which are not necessary for survival, but the image also speaks of Bnei Yisrael sitting and relaxing in the shade, which really sets up a very stark contrast to hardworking laborers toiling away in the strong sun to alleviate their desperate economic straits. In short, we're told in this perek that Bnei Yisrael were living securely and really luxuriously in the time period of Shlomo HaMelech. In the next set of psukim, Vav through Chet, we're told that Shlomo owned 40,000 horses. Unfortunately, with this piece of information, we become aware of the fact that Shlomo violated an explicit mitzvah in Devarim, in which we're told that a king may not have too many horses. And this is actually the second indication after his marriage to Bat Paro, who we discussed in Perek Gimel, was probably a convert, but the Torah says that a man may not marry a Gioret from Mitzrayim until 3 generations have passed. So this is really the second indication that Shlomo really is not doing everything perfectly as king. However, in the next set of psukim, we swing back towards the positive. In Psukim Tet through Yudalid, we're told that Shlomo's God-given wisdom, again, a reflection of the wish he asked for in Perek Gimel, which was granted, we're told that this God-given wisdom manifested itself in 4 different ways. First, we're told that he wrote 3,000 mashal, 3,000 proverbs, which is perhaps a reference to Sefer Mishle, to the book of Proverbs, which we know that Shlomo authored. Second, we're told that he wrote 1,005 shir, 1,005 songs. Perhaps this is a reference to his authorship of Sefer Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, which we also know that Shlomo authored. Third, we're told that Shlomo had a masterful knowledge of trees. In other words, he was an expert in botany. And fourth, we're told that he had expert knowledge of animals, birds, insects, and fish, which means that he was also an expert in zoology. Taken together, Shlomo here is really described as a master of literature, philosophy, natural sciences. There was practically no area of human wisdom that he hadn't mastered. The psukim make it very clear that Shlomo's wisdom far surpassed even the wisest men of the day, and that people came from far and wide to learn from him. In fact, we'll see a famous example of this in Perek Yud, when Malkat Sheva, the queen of Sheba, visits for this very reason. Now, one might think that the wisest man of all time, who was constantly surrounded by admirers wishing to learn from him, would be content to remain where he is and bask in his own brilliance and his admirers. However, as Chazal have taught us, Ezehu Chacham Halomed Mikol Adam. In Judaism, we believe that a truly wise person doesn't actually believe that he is the wisest in all things and knows all there is to know, but rather he is so wise because he constantly strives to learn more from others, to enhance his own knowledge and understanding of the world. The more he knows, the more he realizes he doesn't know. And in fact, this is exactly what Shlomo HaMelech did in the following psukim, which demonstrates that he really was truly the wisest person of all time. The best example of this was in Shlomo's hiring of Hiram Melech Tzor's woodchoppers. In Pasuk Chaf, when Shlomo asked Hiram to have his woodchoppers cut down cedar trees for use of their wood in the Beit HaMikdash, Shlomo wasn't just content with having the Tzidonim do the work themselves and bring the wood afterward to Eretz Yisrael. Rather, Shlomo requested specifically, "V'avadai yihiyu im avadecha," my workers shall work alongside yours. Because Shlomo wanted his workers not only to receive the wood, but to learn the wood chopping trade from the Tzidonim, so that they could import not only the wood itself, but also the technical skills of the woodchopper. Because it was known that the Tzidonim were the most skilled woodchoppers in the ancient world, and Shlomo wanted to import that wisdom so that Bnei Israel can engage in the wood chopping trade in addition to the Tzidonim. Rav Alex Israel claims that this was but one example of Shlomo's learning from others. He explains that really Shlomo aimed to, quote, harness all worldly knowledge and to make Jerusalem the hub of all wisdom, be it scientific, artistic, technological, or intellectual. And Rav Alex explains that he did this by bringing in experts from foreign countries in various areas of knowledge so that Bnei Israel can learn from them. In Pasuk Chaf Hei, we're told that Shlomo paid Hiram Melech Tzor for his woodchopper's labor with agricultural produce. We're actually told that he gave him wheat and olive oil, which demonstrates the agricultural surplus that Bnei Israel enjoyed during Shlomo's reign. In fact, this is the very reward promised to us in Devarim Perek Yud Aleph, Psukim Yud Gimel through Yud Aled, which we quote every day in Shema. We start off saying, "V'haya im shamoa tishme'u el mitzvotai," and it will be if you listen to my mitzvot. And then in the next pasuk, Hashem continues with his promise. If we follow his mitzvot, v'natati mitzar artzachem bi'ito, yore umakosh. Hashem promises, I will give you rain in your land in its time, at the beginning of the agricultural season, whose rain is known as yore, and at the end of the agricultural season, whose rain is known as malkosh. And we're told that the result of this rain coming at the right time will be v'asafta deganacha v'tiroshcha v'yitzarecha, and you will gather your grains, your wheat, your wine, and your oil. And so by the end of this parak, we see that Shlomo has really prepared Bnei Israel society for the upcoming building of the Beit HaMikdash, which will be described in the next parak. And in the next parak, Parak Vav, we'll see Shlomo preparing the physical materials necessary for the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. But as we see, what must come first was Shlomo's establishing his kingdom spiritually, politically, and economically so that the people would be ready for the Beit HaMikdash and all the responsibilities that came along with it. First, Shlomo worked to establish his kingdom spiritually in the ways of the Torah, sitting bedin, judging the people with his great wisdom, as was described in Parag Gimel with the case of the Zonot. once that primary prerequisite of was taken care of, that of establishing the nation with Torah, Shlomo then went about making sure that his kingdom was secure politically and economically, as described in this parak, so that Bnei Yisrael would be peaceful and prosperous. As we're told, the prerequisites for the building of the Beit HaMikdash are Menucha v'Nachala. Bnei Yisrael must achieve peace and they must have conquered the land. And as we saw in this parak, Shlomo was able to expand Bnei Yisrael's borders. Not only did he achieve the conquering of all Bnei Eretz Yisrael, but he even went beyond. And we're told that all Bnei Yisrael yashav ayeshav tachat gafno v'tachat einato, they were prosperous, they were economically, you know, living in luxury. And so we see that after all of Shlomo's spiritual, political, and economic preparation, which helped to secure his kingdom internally, he feels that Bnei Yisrael is now ready to bring the recognition of Hashem out into the world through the building of the Beit HaMikdash, a building that, as we'll see, was not only meant for Bnei Yisrael, but for all nations of the world to come and recognize Hashem. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.